Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish Coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
So I get up and I ask the audience, I said, how many of you are familiar with the TV show American Gladiators? And with this, everyone raises their hand. I said, look around, everyone. I said, before I tell you how I did, can I see by a second show of hands, how many of you are familiar with how I did on the show? I said, look around, nobody. I said, well, that's easy. In that case, I won the national championship.
Having a good time, right?
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, America's premier sales and personal development podcast. Unbelievably, now at 100,000 downloads per month. And thank you very kindly for that cash register. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling. I'm sitting next to
Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. Hey, hey.
And we, first of all, Michael Altshuler is on the, and you can call him Altshuler. He's a friend of mine. We grew up in the same town, but like 20 years apart.
I feel like everyone's a friend of yours.
No, he's on the show today.
He's on the show today. And he's going to talk about gatekeepers.
Yeah, he's a keynote speaker. He's going to teach us how to overcome the gatekeeper, get past the gatekeeper. And it's pretty cool that you guys are from the same town, Jeffrey.
Yeah, literally like three blocks apart. We live three blocks apart.
But Michael has a really cool story. He beat out 10,000 people to compete on American Gladiators.
Whoa.
Yeah, think about that. He had to beat the shit out of 10,000 people
in order to get work. In order to win an opportunity to get the shit beaten out of him American Gladiator.
But he had a whole strategy for how to get on in the same way that you would have a whole strategy for your sales process.
Yeah.
And he's going to talk about that. It's pretty cool.
He's pretty ripped, too, by the way. He didn't win because he was a fat guy. He won because he was, he was ready to go.
Yeah, and he has this method of turning gatekeepers into innkeepers, which I love that term.
Gate sounds extremely interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we get to that, because it's an amazing interview, but before we get to that, we have promised to read a 5-star review every episode. Jeffrey, do you want to read today's review?
Brian writes, Brian with a Y, I love sales, and I find that Sell or Die with Jeffrey Gittimer and Jennifer Gluckow is actually helpful. They're interviewing real leaders who make a difference in the field. It's rare to find a resource that's not recycled buzzwords. I don't know. We use some buzzwords. The ideas they present can help me solve problems and bring in more income. Love it. Now, I'm so grateful for that kind of thing. And
thank
if you guys,
Brian with a Y, that is so kind.
Yeah. If you guys would go on to iTunes and post a 5-star review, we would be greatly appreciative of it.
That's right.
These 5-star reviews that we've been reading lately have been signaling something that we really try to do on this show, which is provide you something tangible to use in your everyday sales life. It's really a cop a word from the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, it is our lodestar. It is our guiding light.
I love that. I love that. I am, on a random note, I am about 15 people away from hitting 5,000 connections on LinkedIn.
Whoa.
So if you want to be my LinkedIn friend, I only need 15 more of you to hit 5,000.
Come on, you bastards. Get over there.
I post cool stuff, guys. Come on, connect with me.
Jennifer Gluckow.
That's right.
On LinkedIn. Gluckow. And
if you're my 5,000th follower, I'm going to do something special for you. Connection, not follower. Connection.
What are you going to do, Jen?
I'm going to send them a care package in the mail.
Come on.
What did you think? I was going to take them to dinner?
Yeah.
No.
Cheap bastard. Go for it. All right, so what's happening? I want to know what's happening in your world.
Well, we are about to embark on tons of travel.
Yeah.
We're going to the Midwest, Nebraska, yep. Chicago, yep. Milwaukee.
Yep. And points east.
Yeah. And so we'll be in those three cities.
Lake Geneva. We're going to Lake Geneva. And then we're going to New York.
Do you go swimming there?
Huh?
Do you go swimming
no,
there?
No, there's no lake in Lake Geneva. You just go, it's like a resort kind of place.
I just needed to know if I should bring my bathing suit.
You could go, well, you can, but the water's like 9.
No thanks. I'll save that for the beach. And then after that, we're embarking on our Gittimer is Back public seminar tour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's going to be phenomenal. The Chicago one's going to be great.
Yep. Chicago is the first city, then Philly, then Dallas, then Atlanta.
And for you diehards out there that have never seen me live, you're missing one hell of a treat. And it's not going to be just me anymore. It's Jen, and the podcast is going to be there. We're going to do a live podcast. You might be a guest on the podcast. You probably won't, but you might be. There'll be a few hundred people hanging around. You can talk to one another, salespeople. You can get a seat in the Learning Academy. All kind of. We're giving away one golden ticket.
That's right. That's right. It's a lifetime of Gittimer Learning Academy for free, for the life of the Learning Academy. That is fine.
People always complain that they can't see me on the show. So they're, you know, we'll do the Facebook Live. So I'll be there. If you want to see my face,
you can actually see Doug's face. That's, you know, more people might be interested in meeting you, Doug, than us.
You'll regret it. Trust me. You don't want to see this face.
No, no.
Doug is bringing a pen in case he has to sign anyone's cast, I don't know. What do you? Oh, we'll have a handout so everyone can autograph their handout. We should put everyone's picture in there, and that way they can sign their picture. So that when we're all dead, they can go on eBay. Autograph playbook.
No, we're not. We're not actually having handouts this time. We don't want to waste paper.
Aha! Uh-huh. All right,
straws.
We're going eco friendly. You know, I have to say, I hate paper straws. There are very few things in this world that piss me off. But when I'm at a restaurant and you hand me a paper straw, I reject it. Okay. And I get mad.
No, here's the deal. They'll tell you, well, we have these little teeny plastic ones that we put in coffee, you know, like a stirrer. They're actually a straw. We can bring you one of those. Like, I don't want that. The bubbles won't even fit in there.
They're so annoying. They break after your fifth sip.
Damn the icebergs. Give me my plastic straws.
Maybe we're all just going to be carrying around our own straws,
what do you mean,
like
we
metal
all?
Straws.
Men don't use straws.
No, you don't use straws.
No, men don't use
Doug,
straws.
Doug, do you use a straw?
I'm not saying that Jeffrey Wright has this vision, but I don't use straws.
Not straws?
There you go. I have to. See? I don't trust people being sanitary with it. I don't.
So you don't use straws?
No, I use straws.
There you go. I absolutely
use straws.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. See, straws are a thing.
This has been our informal poll on straw usage.
Yeah, we're 2-2 here.
So, or the straw poll.
Oh!
Who's got the last straw?
Who's got the dinger on that one? Very, very well done. Very well done. You need two dings for that. That's a double dinger.
All right. Let's get to it.
Okay. We're going to talk to the great Michael Altshuler, because he is solidly aware of what it takes to get past a gatekeeper as a cold caller in the world of copies. He was a copier, door-to-door sales guy who got in, made a ton of sales, and he's going to share with you exactly how it's done. The great Michael Altshuler. Michael Altshuler has been in sales since he was 22 years old, starting Icon Office Solutions in 1997. He's recognized throughout the country as a top expert on leadership, sales, and peak performance. Michael has also been featured on NBC and the New York Times, as well as competed on American Gladiators. Come on, dudes, diehards. I'd like you to welcome the great Michael Altshuler.
Hey, thank you.
But we need to do one other thing in Michael Altshuler's intro. We grew up in exactly the same town, about 4 blocks away from each other, just 20 years apart.
Yeah.
But literally, Margate, New Jersey was our home. And if I say Lucy the elephant, 99.99% of the people have no damn idea what I'm talking about. Me and Michael have been to Lucy the Elephant.
I actually know what you're talking about, but I grew up on the other end of Jersey.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you how old I am. I was there when it was first open. Actually, it opened at the turn of the century, but you could get into the elephant, which was abandoned, and then finally it became a national monument.
What end would you go in, Jeffrey, out of curiosity?
I would go in the butt. Actually, no, one of the feet was the sneak-in entrance.
Do you know what Lucy the Elephant began as? Do
yeah,
you know what
it started? A hotel.
No, before that. It was an attorney's home.
Oh.
No way.
Yes.
I didn't even know that.
It was an attorney's home, and he then made it into a hotel. Or maybe it was a hotel, then the attorney's home. But at one point, it was an attorney's home. Imagine if you're single. And say, come on, let's go to my place for a nightcap.
Yeah. And you walk in some elephant's
butt. You walk into the elephant.
you can leave your trunk at the trunk.
Oh, man. All right. So Michael, we want to know about you. How did you first get into sales?
I think like a lot of guys and gals, I started when I was 8, 9, 10 years old in South Jersey, where I grew up. I used to bring around a little red wagon.
Yep.
And what is that called? A flyer?
Yep. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had one of those, and this was the greatest business in the world. I would make lemonade in my, from stuff in my refrigerator, and I would actually cook hot dogs with my mom's help on the stove, and I would wheel around hot dogs and lemonade, because when they had hot dogs, naturally with all the nitrates and salt, they were very thirsty, so they'd get lots of lemonade. And it was 100% profit. So it was great.
Excuse me. 100% profit because your mom bought this stuff.
Exactly.
That's a classic.
It was an ideal business model, and I had to grow up, and it killed it. But it was great.
How many times – it's a personal question. Did you see the Oscar Mayer wiener in Margate?
I didn't keep track of it, but I know I did see it. And it was pretty.
The guy used to come around all the time. It was like a miniature person, and he was waving in the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
Hey, Jeffrey, he wasn't miniature. The Oscar Mayer Wienermobile was huge. He looked miniature.
Oh, I got it.
He wasn't. What do you think? He was a little.
But they never even gave out hot dogs. They were just like riding around. Oh, look, there's the wiener guy.
It was just a big tease. It was just a big advertising.
Yep.
And they're actually back. Did you know that they're actually kind of rebranding? You know, Oscar Mayer with no nitrates, no salt, and the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile is actually back on the road right now.
Hot dogs with no nitrates and no salt, it's like Cheerios now. It's not quite a hot dog.
Actually, their new motto should be no nitrates, no salt, really no hot dog.
Right, exactly.
We even left out the hot dog.
I use Hebrew National. I'm a Hebrew National guy.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
And I did want to let you know that I kind of grew out of that business with the little wagon and the hot dogs and the lemonade.
Wait, you're not still doing that?
Well, on the side, I really don't want to admit it in public. But
okay.
I did, when times are hard, I do think about that. I did kind of raise the bar a little bit, and I started washing and waxing cars.
Ooh.
with my good friend and neighbor, Jesse Leppendorf, in Margate, New Jersey. And we had a name. It was called Shine On Car Care. We make it our duty to preserve your car's beauty.
Very well done.
I love that.
Over 320 cars experience. And we had that on the card. And we would that's where I really learned to hustle, where I literally stopped cars that were going down the street. It was down the shore. So there was a lot of oxidation and cars were faded. And we'd stop people and say, do you want your car to look like that? And no one would run over a kid in the middle of the street, and they would stop. And literally, we would cold call. We had an appointment book, door to door, stopping cars. And we had full schedule, 7 to 7, 7 in the morning, 7 at night. And we were booked throughout the day, making literally, this is going back 30, 40 years ago, you know, $300, $400, $500, $600 a week each.
Way to go.
Love that guy. Yeah. And wait a minute, cash.
And so how did you go from that to American Gladiators? I'm dying to know.
Well, the Gladiator story, actually, there's a few lessons. You know, everything has a lesson. The great lesson I learned was
don't do that.
Right. That smart people don't go in the ring with people that are 300 pounds.
Come on, where's my ding?
There's no dings on this show. Well, wait a second, no. It's only the live show.
Oh, wait, bullshit.
I can ding you.
I should have got a...
What are you supposed to be dinged every time you...
When you say something good, our producers ding us.
We have like all kinds of sound effects.
It's a good ding.
That was a good ding.
Wait a second. Obviously not. You can't be the judge of your own dings.
No, wait a second. I'm talented around here.
Just so you know, you can't be a legend in your own mind. It has to be other people who...
I have my own bathroom, which I share with other people. That was worth a ding. But
Jeffrey, excuse me. Back to me.
Back to you.
Yeah. So I'm in my office. It's 7:30 at night. And you know how you have those after 6 o'clock conversations with associates?
Of course.
My general manager, David Greenspun, walks in. He sits down on the couch in my office. I come over. We just kind of have an after work conversation about life and what's going on. And we talked about what my dreams were as a kid. My dream was really to play professional sports. And I wasn't big enough, strong enough, fast enough, agile enough. Other than that, I was perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say,
always chosen first.
It
for
sounds
the
like
sports.
You had all the attributes.
I was always chosen first for the bench.
Yeah.
But you could go to ball games and watch the Phillies lose.
I did play football. I played guard, tackle, and end. I guarded the water bucket, and I sat at the end of the bench and tackled anyone that got near it. So that was kind of my role in football. But anyway, as I shared with my associate, David, what my dream was to play professional sports, around 2 months later, he brings in a video cassette. They didn't have DVDs back then. A video cassette of the show that just launched, American Gladiators. And since I was in the copier business in the service department, we had the all-in-one TV with video cassette recorder. We went back. He said, "You got to see this show, Mike. You'd be perfect for it." And he plugs the video cassette in, and I watch these 320-pound muscle-clad gladiators kicking the butts of these unsuspecting contestants. And he looks at me and he says, "Michael, that could be you." What the heck is he so excited about? I thought maybe he didn't like his raise, or he wanted to take over the presidency of the company. Anyway, I gave him every excuse in the world. And it was a great life lesson. Every excuse in the world why I didn't want to do it, because fear had crept in. And I knew it was a dream, a respun dream, but a dream nonetheless, to live out my fantasy of playing at a high level in something competitive in sports on TV in front of 6 million viewers. And I remember feeling exhilaration and fear at the same time, and fear won out, as it oftentimes does. And I told him every excuse in the world. There was tryouts 4 places in the country. I told him why I couldn't go. He bought it. The next year, he comes in with season 2, and he says, "Mike, you got to check out season 2, and they have tryouts in New York at, get this, the Coliseum. And it said on the marquee, free tryouts to be on American Gladiators." He said, "Mike, why don't we make a weekend of it?" Here, David Greenspun was chasing my dream for me. Cool. We always need someone in our corner to really support us in our goals, our vision, our dreams, because none of us can really go it alone. And we went up there, and, you know, there was a long story, but there was a lot that I did to ensure the very high likelihood I would be on the show by applying some of the principles that I teach now in sales and enterprise sales.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
But I have a question about American Gladiators. It wasn't easy to get on the show, was it? Like, how many people were you competing against to even have a spot on the show?
10,000 tried out. 5,000 were in New York at the Coliseum.
Wow.
And they selected two out of 5,000 New York. I was one of the two. But I want you to know, none of it was luck. And do I have, I'd like to share just a couple of minutes for anyone who wants to be on a TV show, how to move, go from not even a slight chance to actual probability.
Yeah.
So this is a strategy I use in major account sales. It's called ACE and MAP. ACE is an acronym for analyze, strategize, and execute. And MAP is an acronym for massive attack plan. So when, if you look at when world wars are fought or Super Bowls or World Series, think about the level of analyzation they do of the opponent of everything. They take it to such a deep level. They leave no stone unturned. They develop multiple strategies and then they massively attack it. They practice, drill, and rehearse until they know exactly what they're going to do. Peyton Manning was probably one of the best in football at doing this. Not certainly not the best athlete, not the best quarterback, but no one would analyze, strategize, and then execute better than him.
If it wasn't for John Fox, he could have won another Super Bowl.
There you go. And if anyone knows football, we'll talk about Eagles later, I promise.
Okay, cool.
No, okay. Enough Eagles, guys. Enough Eagles. No, they won. We get it.
No, there's never enough Eagles.
Right. Exactly. Try to explain that to people. They outperformed. They out-executed. And they were and they out-coached, arguably, one of the best football coaches of all time.
Here we go.
Yep. No doubt. This system, this process works for anything. The challenge is, which we're going to get to later, I hope, is that it's so hard to do. Thinking is hard to do. Deep thinking is even harder to do. No one wants to do that. Everyone wants to win, but no one wants to put the effort in to win. Wayne Gretzky, when he was interviewed, still at the top of his game in hockey, still a winner, he was interviewed and he was retiring. Few professional athletes retire near the top of their game. The person interviewing him said, Wayne, why are you retiring? You're still a force in the National Hockey League. You're still winning games. Why would you retire now? It doesn't make any sense.
Because I'm on the Rangers.
He looked at the interviewer and said, I still have the will to win. I just don't have the will to prepare to win. Ooh. And he knew that it was in the preparation that games are won. And so going back to American Gladiators, I ask these simple questions, and this can be used for any major account, any enterprise sale that you're working on. The analyze, strategize, and execute strategy got me from possibility to inevitability being on this TV show when there was 10,000 people and I was one of 22, less than 0.5%. And here's what I did. Number one, I say, what do they want in a contestant? Why do they choose certain contestants? Let's analyze that. And when you look at that, just like what does a customer want? Why do they make this selection? You analyze everything. They always want the antagonist. They want the nerd. They want all these different characters. But then the big question, as we know, is why? Why do they want them? Because they only care about one thing on TV. And what is that?
Viewers.
Drama.
Viewers. Well, drama. And why do they want drama? Why do they want viewers? Why do they want viewers?
Ads.
Ratings.
Ads.
Ads.
Money.
Bingo. Bingo. They want ads. The more viewers, like the Super Bowl, the more money they charge for commercials.
Right.
That's it. So the more drama, the more interesting it is, the more they can charge. So I had to come up with this strategy. How could my story, and it's all about the story, be more interesting than anyone they've ever had on the show? So I analyzed the show and I looked at all the people they selected. Okay. That was the first step. The second step was I was donating a lot of money and very involved with the Atlantic City Rescue Mission. So the homeless was a plight that I wanted to help. It was in my heart. And this is my theme now. I'm going to donate all my prize winnings. If I win the $10,000, which was the grand prize back then, kind of low by today's standards, I'm going to donate all that money. And on national TV in front of 6 million viewers, I'm going to raise awareness of the homeless plight in America and in my own backyard. And here's the theme. Business executive at 34, I was one of the oldest on the show, shedding his suit and tie to fight for the homeless.
Wow.
And that was it. Now, after that, because I in my community, I was involved in a lot, the TV commercials for my own company, and there was a charity event for Big Brothers and Big Sisters that Cher, at the top of her game, when she was an international, she still is, but when she was dating Bon Jovi, I went up to her. I was wearing my American Gladiator shirt. I knew she would be there. And I had a picture with my arm around Cher with the American Gladiator shirt and sent it to the head of production. I said, is this the type of publicity you're looking for, out of curiosity? So that was phase one. And I'll go through this really quickly. The second phase, which is critical, now that I did my analytical work, I said, how am I going to get my story into their bloodstream? Who is the influencer, the decision maker who can say, yeah, we love the story. We love Michael Altshuler. We love the personality. We want him on our show. How can I not be another number and penetrate the tens of thousands of people that are putting their name in to be on this show?
And I'm also, by the way, have their story.
Say that again?
All those other people have their story as well.
Absolutely. Everyone has a story. The question is how well you communicate your story, how good your story is, and are you getting your story to the person making the decision?
Mm-hmm.
And can you develop a relationship with that person? Because as we know, people buy from people they know, like, and trust. So how can I break through all this clutter? And here's what I did. I'm really banging my head against the wall as I'm watching the TV show. And at the end of the TV show, it was like God miraculously threw it at me. Across the screen, scrolling down, executive producer, director. It gives you all the people that are making the decision for the show.
Cool.
Yeah. It's like looking, you show, I wasn't even looking, but it was there. It was like smack me in the face. So the producer, and this is 20 some years later, was Eton Keller. And I remember he would work for, it was either Universal Studios or Samuel Goldwyn Productions. They worked together on this TV show. So I write out a script as to what I'm going to say, how I'm going to get past the gatekeeper, who I happen to call innkeepers, because they don't keep you out. They can get you in if you handle them properly, turning gatekeepers into innkeepers. That's another story. But I said, I'm ready. I'm prepared that when she picks up this call, I'm going to say what I need to say to get through to Eton Keller to tell my story. So here's what happened. I call up Samuel Goldwyn Productions or Universal Studios, and I say, hello, my name is Michael Altshuler. I'm calling for Eton Keller, the executive director of the show. She says, hold 1 second, please. Totally ready and prepared to speak to the assistant. And who picks up the phone? Eton Keller. No, who calls him? No one. How of 10,000 people that tried out for the show, how
no
many
one called him. Yeah.
Well, you tell me, how many people would call the executive producer?
One.
One.
The guy with balls.
Yeah. No, hey. The Jew from Margate. This is, look, this is a heritage thing, not simply a ball
love
thing.
It.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, but you have to have a little, you know, oomph to do that.
Yeah, chutzpah. So anyway, he picks up the phone. We develop a relationship, which you have to do in the first few minutes. And I tell him, I said, listen, I have a story that I think is going to make your ratings skyrocket. It's a story that you probably never had on the show. I'm an athlete. I'm older. I'm a successful executive. My company was doing millions of dollars in business. I'm shedding my suit and tie to fight for the homeless and bring awareness to the homeless on your show. And I have a great story. And I told him the story and we had a great relationship. We laughed a lot. It was a 15, 20 minute conversation. And he wasn't now an executive director of the show anymore. He was a Michael Altshuler fan, zealot, and ambassador. And he said, Michael, here's how it goes. We have a committee of 6 people that decide on who we select for being on our show. He said, I was actually going on a European cruise during the selection process. He actually would ping me and let me know how I was doing. He said, Mike, you made it to the final 100. Mike, you made it down to the top 60. He was fighting for me as David Greenspun fought for me to go on the show to live my dream. Here's a guy at the tail end of making it to live my dream. Here's a guy fighting for me to be on this show. And ultimately, I think he was a little more excited when he gave me the news that, Mike, they selected you to be on the show. And the lesson I learned, two major lessons. One was one, you have people in your corner that always can help. Well, they either pull you down or push you up towards your goals and dreams. And they helped me do that. And the second thing is you have to analyze, strategize, and execute. And the last part of this is when I tried out before they were making their selection, I tried out in New York at the Coliseum, 5,000 people. It was mayhem. They expected 2,000. Well, you put on the marquee, free tryouts to be on the hit TV show American Gladiators in New York. Everyone and their brother shows up, right? You can imagine. So at the end of the day, I made sure I knew who the people were. Todd Christensen was there, who's an NFL player. And one of the person, they called me in a room. They interviewed me in front of a camera. And then at the end of the day, I was the first one there and the last one to leave. And that's another kind of business strategy I came up with. On a major account, you want to be the first one there to set the standard and set the pace and plant the seeds. And you want to be the last one there because people buy on emotion. And you want to make that final statement that they'll remember and that will anchor you in their hearts and their minds to make the decision with you.
Wow. I love Great the story. Parallels between getting on the show and selling a major account. It's amazing how well connected they are.
They really are. Totally. 100%.
So here's this is the epilogue to this. Michael Altshuler could not have made it on American Gladiator, no matter what his capability was as an athlete, unless he was a master salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. You said that's very true, and also without other people stepping in.
You would have been an also ran if you didn't have a story.
Yeah,
and an also ran if you couldn't get to the decision maker. And it also ran if you didn't have the enthusiasm and were able to transfer your message, and all of that is sales.
Or if you got to the decision maker and then weren't prepared.
Yeah.
100%.
There are so many things in there. That's amazing.
You get to the executive producer on a cold call, and he answers the phone, and you go, can I have 5 minutes of your time so I can bore the shit out of you with my story?
Well, you know, you said that, and everyone knows Jeffrey with his kind of conservative personality. You know, Jeff, you and I have had multiple conversations in bars, National Speakers Association conventions, where we talk about.
I prefer to call them cafes, but yes.
as you were sipping on your cappuccino,
yeah,
or your frappe, the thing that we talked about is you really have to stand out, in especially today with the thousands and thousands of messages. You know, how do you really stand out in the hearts and minds of prospects and customers? How do you differentiate yourself? Everyone talks about today, how do you be disruptive? You know, but the bottom line is you got today more than ever, there's thousands of things thrown at people. How do you, in subject lines, in conversations, how do you hook people immediately and get what you're talking about on the top of their plate?
Now, let's take that for just a second. It's the first line, and people don't understand that "how are you today" doesn't work anymore.
Exactly.
Because you don't even know them, so you don't really care how they are. It comes off disingenuous.
Do you know Michael Aronin?
No. Should
I? The NSA guy with cerebral palsy?
No.
He walks like he's going to fall over.
Uh-huh.
And a great guy, and he's a comedian. And so they had him at the foundational thing, no, the cigar peg or whatever it is.
Okay.
And he's among other performers. And on purpose, he starts at the back end of the stage so that he like wiggles and wobbles all the way to the microphone. And he leans into the microphone. He goes, "But by the time I get up here, my time's up." And people were howling. Not at all put off by his walk or the way, but obviously he's very handicapped, although he can drive and he has kids.
Right.
He was hysterical.
And you know, it's interesting, Jeffrey, that you say that because it's very similar. I see the comparison to when you enter the platform after indulging a little bit, you kind of stumble up to the microphone as well.
Yeah. That's my.
That's his MO.
Yeah, my M. Bingo.
Okay, so Michael, in your story, you mentioned getting past the gatekeeper, which you don't refer to. You call it getting in with the innkeeper. Getting
right.
Say, and you said you'd tell us another time. Well, now's another time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. I meant another time, like 15 minutes later.
Okay. Cool.
Fine, it's another time.
All right, we're ready.
Another time zone.
So you know what's interesting? When people plant certain seeds in their mind, what salesperson is not going to think, "Oh no, the gatekeeper. Oh no, the gatekeeper." When you start planning all these negative thoughts in your head, and it's already negative. So you don't expect a great relationship if you're saying those things in your head, that self-talk.
Or you expect questions that you're not prepared to answer.
Yeah. So I think to your point about, you know, don't say the normal, hi, how are you today, that they've heard 100 times is disingenuous, is that treat the gatekeeper exactly how you would treat the decision maker. Because they, and I, in one of my my mem cards, which, you know, I created, Jeffrey, is how to turn gatekeepers into innkeepers. You see, if you develop a good enough relationship with them, humor, connection, relating, courtesy, all the things that you would do with a decision maker, you treat them with all those same and all those same ways, they will tell you, hey, listen, Mary will be in at 4 o'clock today. They'll kind of whisper into the phone to give you like the inside track, because no one treats them with that same time and dignity and respect and also humor. I mean, you know, Jeffrey and I are big proponents of humor. And I think that regardless of how, you know, I'll call big customers up and they say, listen, Mike, I'm really busy right now. They always take my call. I'm really busy. I said, listen, I just heard a one-liner. You got to hear it. They always have time for a one-liner.
Of course. Of course.
Everyone has time to laugh but not necessarily talk about business. But that's the icebreaker. We all talk about that. People start from the heart. They start from the gut. And then we go to the business from there. So that's the innkeeper
that's
story.
Cool.
For our
cool
diehards that are listening and going, yeah, well, what do you say? I say, I'll walk up to the gatekeeper and say, I know you actually run the place, but I'd like to speak to the person that thinks they do. And I get through. Or they will say, what's this in reference to? And I will say, it's a business matter of a personal nature. And that stops the questioning, and she will immediately, or he will immediately, go to the decision maker and say, there's a guy out here with something personal.
Let me share with you a story. I wanted to do the keynote speech.
Wait, we have music for a story.
Well, that's my
hold
that's
on.
My
cue the music.
Okay, now you can start.
Perfect. Do I have outro music as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, now, you get to talk over
the
music.
Tell the story. Come on.
Oh, okay. So I wanted to do the international keynote for Office Depot, which is located around 15 minutes to corporate offices down here in the Boca Del Rey area. James Fuentes at the time, this is going around 15 years ago, was the CEO of, at the time, probably a $10 billion a year company, big company. Probably has 250 senior VPs working for him. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I knew if I put my name in, they would typically have Norman Schwarzkopf and they had all the big George Foreman. They'd have all the biggest names in the world doing their keynotes. No, I would never get past round one of the cuts for a keynote being doing keynote speech. So I said, how can I get in to see the CEO? And then if I'm good enough to get into the CEO of a cold call on a cold call, then he might hire me, because then I could teach people how to do the same thing. So what I did with the receptionist was, it was around Christmas time. I brought her some flowers and I said, I know this seems like I'm kissing up, and I want you to know 99% is from my heart. 1% is I am kissing up, but I need to get in to see Mr. Fuentes. And I said, how would you suggest the best way of going about that would be? Has anyone ever gotten in to see him, and what did they do? And I mean, this is a big thing. Like I said, they're huge. So I found out who his secretary was. And so I had to go through the receptionist, secretary, and then to him. I said, why would they want to talk to me? And here's the strategy that I came up with. I'm going to write, I write poetry. So I wrote a poem memorializing everything that was big about the company and about him personally, about his family, everything that was online and that I could glean from the receptionist. And he had just bought Viking Office Supply, which is a $1 billion acquisition. So I did all my research, wrote a poem, and I had it all prepared. I dressed up nice in a suit and I said, I wanted to, and I have these beautiful gift baskets that I created. I wanted to deliver this gift basket to Mr. Fuentes and recite him a poem. Because if I went to deliver the gift basket, they would just, his secretary would come down and get it, and that would be the end of it. It wouldn't mean a meeting. So I said, I want to deliver this gift basket and also recite a poem to him. Well, I hear the receptionist calling the secretary, telling the story to the secretary. There's a man down here that has a gift basket for you. I have one for the secretary and for Mr. Fuentes. And he has a poem that he wants to recite to him. I know it's kind of weird, but I had to do something way out of the box because for business reasons, he would never see me.
Did it have the word Nantucket in there? All right, go ahead.
Okay, so thank you for that commercial break. So, nope. anyway, the secretary's talking, and I can hear she answers, "Oh, nicely." And I said, "Did she ask how I was dressed? Like she wanted to make sure I wasn't a terrorist." He's dressed nicely. I said, "May I have the phone?" And I used the physical action pose. I actually reached, as I said, "May I have the phone to talk to her?" And I actually reached for the phone and gently took it out of her hand.
Right.
And I said, "Hi, this is Michael. And I just want you to know, they said they were going to send someone down to get the poem in the basket. And I said, I want you to know that I have to personally recite this to him because it only takes a minute. It's kind of like a singing telegram, if you will. I said, it will only take a minute. And can you please grant me that?" She said, "Put the receptionist back on." They talked for a minute, hung up, and she said, "Here's your badge." And here I go up. I'm going to be visiting with the CEO on a cold call of a $10 billion a year company. I gave him a reason he had to see me. I gave a short period of time, gift basket, had to recite the poem. No one else could do it. I walk into his office. He stands there with his hands behind his head when he sees me come in, shakes my hand, greets me, puts his hands behind his head, leans back in his reclining chair, shuts his eyes, and I start reciting the poem. And he's probably thinking, what did I do? Why did I invite this moron in here? And I'm reciting this poem. And around 30 seconds, 20 seconds into the poem, he realizes that I did my homework. And I'm touching on all the things that are important to his company, to him personally, to the acquisition, the newest news, the things they're working on. And he takes his hands from behind his head, leans forward, and is listening intently to the rest of the poem. I finish, and I kid you not, he said, "Wow, that was really good." And I said, "Thank you, Mr. Fuentes." I said, "Let me explain the other reason why I'm here today. You have an international sales conference that you're having, and I want to be your keynote speaker. And if you want your salespeople visiting CEOs of big companies and getting in on cold calls, then I'm your man." I said, "Did you ever hear Selling DeVito?" And he says, he got all excited. He said, "Yes, we had Anthony in last year as our keynote speaker. That was just luck."
Yeah.
And he said, and he said, "Mike, I'm going to introduce you on the C-level floor. I'm going to introduce you to the senior VP who's making that decision. And I'll call him right now and you can set a meeting with him to go over what you do." And that was, I never got the gig, but it taught me some great lessons on how to get through or in with the innkeeper.
Wait a minute. You didn't get the gig after all that?
No, it was a sad story.
That's bullshit.
I know. Well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
That's right. That's right.
But if there was ever a time to put what the fuck on his door.
Well, I do want to tell you, I did go back and recaptured the gift that I gave him. I took it away.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way, this is not for you.
This is no longer for you.
No, I'm going. No, this. It not only is it not for you, but I'm going to Office Max.
I told him he can keep the fruitcake, though.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh man,
this is an amazing sales interview. That's kind of a story interview.
Yeah, this is real.
Very well done. Very, very well done.
I feel like you could be telling us stories for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Why, did you want another one?
Yeah, I'll tell you.
We always want another one.
When I was growing up in Atlantic City, they had trolleys up Atlantic Avenue.
Yeah.
And
a long time ago, Jeff.
My mom would take us to the shoe store.
Yeah.
Ricky's Shoes or whatever, Florsheim Shoes.
Oh, Florsheim.
Yeah, you know.
Yep.
I went to a Florsheim.
Yep. Right, exactly. And she would take us to buy shoes, you know, every year, 6 months, whenever our feet grew, my brother and I. And we're on the trolley, and I thought I saw the store. And I got off the trolley, and my mom didn't.
Ooh.
And my ass is running down the street for two blocks until finally she got off the thing. Fast forward 40 years, and I used that as my opening line when I gave my main platform presentation at the National Speakers Association.
Really?
And I started it out like this. I lost my mother when I was 2.5 years old. I found her an hour later. She got off the bus. I got lost. And that's an opening that it works, but it's based on truth.
Yeah.
The funniest, best, most impactful lines that you can deliver as a salesperson or as a speaker are based on truth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I just a real quick segue. I'm selling this influencer. His name's Mike Case. Showboat Casino, Atlantic City. Casinos were a big part of my business back then. And it's between me and Bill Carpo. Bill was out of Philadelphia, worked for a company called X-Tech. And it was my chief competitors in Atlantic City. And Bill was a senior guy with Xerox, phenomenal salesman. But I beat him 90% of the time. So he was phenomenal. And I was, I guess, a little more.
You were a little bit better. Yeah, you were phenomenal plus.
Thank you. I didn't want to say that. I was trying to be humble. I appreciate you kicking
Yeah, you're about as humble a guy as I think I. In fact, I think if you go to Webster and you look up the word humble, it's going to say, see also Michael Altshuler.
And on my picture with an extra, a line.
Yeah, exactly.
I got a line. I get it. So anyway, it's kind of funny that I'm dealing, Tom Adams is the decision maker, and I'm dealing with Mike Case. And it's near the end of a six-month sales cycle. And Mike Case, we're making kind of our final pleas as to why he should. It's between me and Bill Carpoo from X-Tech, why they should buy from me. Why he should buy from me instead of X-Tech. And he's making this recommendation to Tom Adams. So when we're done, I said, so that's why you should buy from me. And with this, his head slumps over and it looks like he passed out on the conference room table. I said, Mike, are you okay? I thought he had maybe had a heart attack or something. And he says, no, I have a real big challenge, Michael. And I said, well, what's that? He said, well, every time I meet with you, I want to do business with you. And every time I meet with Bill, when I'm done that meeting, I want to buy from Bill. He says, I don't know what to do. I said, I know what you should do. I have the answer. And with this, he kind of perked up and he said, well, what is it? I said, just make sure I'm the last person you meet with.
Exactly.
And that's where I got, that's actually from that meeting, true story, where I got, you know, they had inventory systems called LIFO, last in, first out, things like that. Mm-hmm. In sales, I used that same acronym that we want to be first in, FI, last out. So
it's called FILO, and it is an accounting procedure.
Thank you, Jeff.
No problem. I studied accounting in college.
Okay.
I dropped out a year later, but I studied it.
So, Michael, this has been awesome.
Yep.
Thank you for coming on our show. Yep. Where can people find out more information if they want to get in touch with you?
Mike,
we got the American Gladiator music in the background.
That is too funny.
All right, where on, Michael, can we don't listen you? To music. We got to find
you. www.michaelaltshuler.com.
It'll be in the show notes.
That's where you have amazing content and podcasts with great leaders and people like you folks. And
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Michael,
you're welcome.
It's been a pleasure having you on. You have won the $10,000 prize.
Yes.
National champion.
And you're going to donate it back to Sell or Die. Thank you so much for doing that.
It's one step away from homeless.
Thanks for being on the show, Michael. Oh, we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
So what do you think, Jen?
Michael Altshuler rocks.
Exactly. And he's proof that people who originate in Atlantic City and Margate are going to rule and dominate the sales world.
Hey, where did you originate from?
Jeffrey.
Margate, Atlantic City.
Let me tell you something. There are cities all over this country that people can dominate from as well.
But it ain't west of the Delaware River, I can tell you that. If you would recognize that Mike Altshuler had stories that rocked. He had real world examples of how he did himself.
Yep.
You know, of getting to a CEO, of getting on an improbable American Gladiator, whatnot. And he gave us little snippets that reminded me of my snippets.
He was actually, I know we were joking about him being humble, but he was actually humble about it.
There's not a humble bone in that guy's body.
Jeffrey, he was actually humble about it in the beginning because he didn't say he had to beat out 10,000 people until I asked, you know, how many people were you competing against? And I had no idea I was going to go into this great sales lesson. I mean, there were so many things I took away from that besides the ace and the map that, you know, he talked about.
Yeah, but I would say this. The underlying theme in his stories was get to the decision maker or die. Mm-hmm. And he figured out a way, a creative way to get to the decision maker. That was his MO. That was his shtick. That was his way of life, was getting to the decision maker. He did not tell you that he ran a very successful copier business that was very, very well done that he sold.
And he sold to Icon.
Huh?
He sold to Icon. Yeah. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And here's the important question, though. What would your American Gladiator name be?
Yeah.
It's got to be one word that's really strong.
Yeah. Fall Guy.
What was his
Mine would
American
be Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
I'd be falling every damn time.
Trippy.
Yeah. I've only watched that show a couple of times. It seemed to me like it was exceptionally violent.
I'll have to admit I haven't really watched it.
All right. So I'll give you one, Jen. So your sales in a New York minute, everything's fast, everything's rapid. So I'm going lightning for Jen.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see, Red Book, kick your own ass kicker for Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Kick your own ass. Red Book. That would be a good one. But also it could be Water Boy, because when you fall, you're in the water, and I'd be in the water often.
Oh, man.
Those guys were built. Being an athlete enough to be on American Gladiators enough. But when you're competing with 10,000 people from Manhattan or from the boroughs, you're competing against real people.
Yeah. You know, at the beginning of our episode, and you diehards, you hear this every week, but you may tune it out sometimes. Jeffrey says, you need sales balls to make sales calls. And is that a good impression of you?
Yeah.
Okay. And Michael had sales balls. I mean, to write a poem and then be the delivery person of the gift basket and go up there and recite the poem. That's chutzpah. That's ballsy. I love that.
Yep. I can recount 20 stories of New York City or big metropolitan area sales, but they have the same kind of process. You either are dealing with the decision maker or you're in a group of people that no decision will ever be made.
So the challenge for our diehards this week is, what are you doing that's ballsy? What are you doing? And think about what you did last week. How can you change some of those activities to bring a little bit more oomph to your sales calls?
So let me exacerbate the one that I did. You need sales balls to make sales calls. You need sales balls to get to the person who's going to decide whether you get the sale or not. That's where your balls come in.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just talking to somebody and, you know, regurgitating a bunch of stuff to non-decision makers.
I just want to point out one thing. In this episode so far, we've talked about wieners, butts, and balls. But the second thing that I want to say is, if you have a great story that recounts an instance like that, make sure to send that to sellordie@gittimer.com so that we could read those stories next week.
Yeah, we want to hear them.
We'll acknowledge you, and we just might send you a sell or die wristband.
We just might.
So when you send the story in, make sure your address is in there and make sure you put that zip code on there. You know, I can remember when you had to remind people to put your zip code on.
You know, you know how interesting it would be if one of our diehards used the like ace strategy on us,
where they analyzed how
to get that wristband and really gives us like the exact most amazing right story.
We're throwing down the gauntlet, you gladiators.
We're ready, guys. We're ready.
Yeah, we're bring the it goblet. On.
All right, so it's time for us to say goodbye. I hate saying goodbye every week, but it is that time again.
Parting is such sweet sorrow.
I know. But before we say goodbye, we just have to give a major shout out to Death Wish Coffee, because they keep us energized throughout the show and throughout the day.
We didn't tell that to Altshuler. No. How do you stay energized?
Death Wish Coffee.
Dude, it's up there. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
And now we've spoken about ass on the show as well.